Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
I'm Gemma Jones. I'm an improvement coach based in the UK and working with people around the world.
I'm Jason Orlando, one of the directors of the performance improvement team here at Baptist.
Well, guys, today we are so excited to have as our guest Marcia Reynolds. And in my doing my background, I came to find out that Marcia is actually a coach to the coaches. She spent her career helping organizations become better and helping their culture through coaching. She has a doctorate in organizational psychology, two masters, one in learning psychology. And I apologize, Marcia, I can't remember where the other one was from, what the other one was in. She is the president and founder of Co-Visioning, an organization that helps companies become better through coaching. She's author of many books. And today we're going to discuss her book called Coach the Person, Not the Problem, A Guide to Using Reflective Inquiry. So Marcia, once again, on behalf of Baptist, welcome. And tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Well, actually, I did even start in healthcare, my first job. Working, hospital corporation, and then moved on into technology because, boy, that seemed like the place to go. And the changes that were happening then that was scaring people, you know, there's been so many since then, too. I decided to start my own business, which I always had intentions for that. But for me, the quest was always, what does it take for people to learn and grow? So, and that actually was my second master's because I fell into the training department and was training at the hospital and I didn't know what I was doing. So that's why I got a second master's in instructional design and learning. And I was always on that quest. And the last day of my last job, somebody sent me an article about this coaching thing. It was 1995. So I always say too, it was like so perfect to get involved then because I could help bring the profession out into the world and help to shape it even, which was so exciting. But that's what drew me to even get my doctorate was I wanted to know what goes on in the brain, what makes coaching different than just telling people what to do and learn so much about it is way different in what happens in the brain when you help people think for themselves. So I do coach for 5 coaching schools in the world and work with coaches, but I do work with organizations and in many areas, but have worked with Dignity Health quite a bit in the West here and Mayo Clinics. And so, you know, healthcare has always been kind of woven into the work that I do. But I'm still just fascinated about coaching and there's still so much to learn. And that's why I keep writing because I keep learning and I want to share it. So, yeah, that's kind of the journey.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, Jason and Gemma are both coaches. So I'm going to just open it up and guys, you guys start firing away.
Marcia, I'd love to ask you about, you know, something I talk about a lot is how the importance of the relationship between the coach and the, you know, the learner or the person we're coaching. And, you know, I really love in your book, you talk about the coach needs to sort of create that energetic bond of trust and safety. And so I'd love to hear a bit more about that and how you might do that as a coach.
Yeah, sure. You know, first to say that it's when people often say, how is coaching different from therapy? Actually, first off, it is the relationship. Because I'm just a thinking partner. You know, when you work with clients, you're not the one that's going to tell them what to do. And so the power dynamic is you're hoping that there is an equality there. I mean, they're always going to see you as the dominant person in the conversation, which also means you have a responsibility for the emotions you bring in and for making that connection. But because I'm not the expert, the fixer, the healer, that I'm just here with you, then it's even more critical that you feel safe with me because I'm not telling you what to do. I'm exploring with you. And to really get deeper into somebody the way they think, they have to not just trust you, but like you.
Yeah.
And we have to do that with our emotions. I mean, you know that if my emotions don't match what I say, they're not going to trust you. So I have to come in with, I care for you. I'm here for you. I believe in you. And I accept you for whoever you are and wherever you are, which that emotional state that I'm feeling that they you know, meet me in the middle. There's so much of an energetic exchange between us that my emotions actually will start to regulate theirs, which releases any tension that they might have and stimulates the neurochemicals and hormones of oxytocin. So they're like, oh, I like being with you. And the dopamine and the serotonin that opens their mind. So they're willing for you to ask them questions and even challenging questions, that they'll stay with you in the process. So it's that emotional connection, that emotional energy, that is the critical piece to really have effective coaching. And we'll also sustain the profession, because AI can't do that.
I love that you went there, Marcia, because, you know, that's a big part of the conversation at the moment in the industry. And, well, we can just have AI coaches. And I really strongly believe you can't, because of that relation. Yeah. That's one thing AI can never do, is that co-regulation.
Right. They can do the basics. It's like when you first learn, you know, the rote skills. Okay, they'll do that. But this is why it's so important for coaches. Just, I always say, you learn the skills. It helps you to anchor yourself in the curiosity and in the coaching, so you don't just jump and tell them what to do. But then the next transformation is to forget about him, to trust yourself, you know, enough. Yeah, just to be there with them and have a conversational flow. When I coach, I know that I'm trying to figure out what they really want, what's stopping them from getting there, and what they'll do next. I know that, but I don't have to think about it. I'm just here with you. And the best compliment I ever got was when one of the people, it was a coaching demonstration, and he told them afterwards, he said, you know, it just felt like we were having this conversation, and then all of a sudden, boom, I had a breakthrough. I said,
that's great. Marcia, in our management system here, we you know, use a lot of lean principles, and we have what we like to call a just culture. And in a just culture, we say, okay, it's the process and it's not the person. But, you know, according to your book, you contend that sometimes it is the person, and especially leaders, we get in our own way. Meaning we have blind spots that we can't see. And talk to us about how or we have mindsets that have been formed by past experiences, and tell us about how a coach helps the leader or the person recognize those blind spots and helps them sort of change the way they think about things.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's only a blind spot because your brain doesn't want you to see it. The brain's primary function is to keep you safe and keep you comfortable. So, you know, when you start questioning, not just what you do, but who I am, the brain says, no, not going there. Because then we have to, like, you know, let go of that comfort of who I think I am, even if I know who I think I am is not serving me. And so left to our own devices, we don't go there. We'll rationalize a way to say, well, I did it because I'll change someday. And you know that, you know, all the studies around people told if they don't take this medication and do this activity, you'll die. And they'll do it for a short time and then rationalize why they don't do it anymore. You know, we're master rationalizers. So we need someone outside of us just to even reflect. I think reflection is even often more powerful than the question, that I concisely summarize, you know, and using the key words that you use to define your challenge and yourself. And I offer that back to you, that you can see it here. It's like, oh, that's what I'm thinking. And what I'm doing is actually overriding your protective brain and allowing you to observe your thinking, you know, and seeing that how you define the situation. Are there gaps in your logic? Are you doing things because you're afraid of what others might think or not doing? And often it's how I define myself. So Harvey, even in your situation of being a surgeon and head of quality, you wearing those hats, you're a person who knows, you know, and it's required for you to know, you know, you have to do your job. But now I'm saying, don't know, forget about it, you know, and that shift to being a coach for you is a big shift to let go of being the one who knows to being the one who's, I don't know, let's understand together. You know, sure. So, exactly. Yeah. And so coaching is, I'm your thinking partner to help you get over that. Yeah.
Marcia, I know that I've struggled with that in my career, and coming from an improvement background, you're often looked at as the person that ought to know and come in and solve all problems.
Right.
But there takes a lot of unlearning to come and admit that I don't know. You know, in your experience, you know, where have you seen maybe those in the improvement kind of profession, you know, really struggle with that sort of kind of stepping back and saying, I'm not the expert, I'm just here to kind of be with you and sort of help thinking?
Yeah. Well, I ran training departments for 16 years. So I think I went through that. I remember when I first started coaching, there was no Zoom Teams. It was all on the phone. And so they could not see me do this. You know, I so wanted to tell them, you know, you want to look at it as a habit, that we're shifting a mental habit, but it's aligned with who I think I am. And I need to come as the of not knowing, really. And that does take time of developing that it's okay to not know. It's okay not to think. You know, and to trust that if I'm receiving from you what you're saying and I can summarize it and offer it back, that's enough. You know, and that telling myself that's a value, you know, instead of, oh, I'm always telling you what to do and what the answer is. So it does take time. And most of us come from telling professions. You know, and that's why I always say, well, first you have to learn the competencies, because it's your crutch to get over telling and knowing, mentoring into coaching. You hold on to the competencies, but the next transformation is let them go and trust yourself. Just be with them, let it flow, and trust that as it flows and you're sharing what you hear and asking questions, something's going to click. You know, and there's always some kind of learning. And breakthroughs don't have to be like, wow, okay, I get it now. It could be as little as like, duh, I should have known that. You know, or this morning I did a demo very early where it really was what seemed on the surface very simple, that, you know, the realization that he made when I asked him. But yet I said, did you know this before we came in? He said, no, I absolutely never even thought about that, even though it seems now like common sense. You know, so it comes in many packages, the opening to a new idea and to seeing new possibilities. So once you do this, right, I'm sure you've experienced this, once you start to see that magic happen, you start trusting that coaching really is good. So, but it does take time, Jason.
And that's such a more rewarding experience to see that light bulb in somebody else's hand.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
As opposed to just giving them an answer, which in reality probably is not that good.
Right. I mean, even as a leader, you know, just turning around. And I remember this, someone who I was co-teaching with, and he was saying how he was a stage manager for movies, and one day everything was going wrong and he went into the director and listed all this terrible stuff, and the director says, wow, I can't wait to see how you handle this. And he had no choice. And he went out and handled it, you know. So even as a manager, turning around and saying, so what have you been thinking? You know, you've had experience in this, you know, what idea did you throw out because you didn't think it would work? You know, to even give it back as a leader is so important to develop people's minds, help them think in a broader way for themselves. That's talent development, not just technical skills.
I heard you say there, Marcia, that you receive from the person you're coaching. And so I love this concept that I've heard you talk about, that it's about receiving, not just listening. And I wondered if you could just tell us a bit more about the nuance of those descriptions.
I think it was Julian Treasure in a TED talk, and he talked about listening. And that's the first time I heard the concept of receive and appreciate. You know, and then his formula was receive, appreciate, summarize, ask. In fact, often when I teach leaders a coaching approach, I just use that. Just receive it. I mean, take it in. Take it in. Not just hear it, but fully take it in. And I do a lot of work around opening head, heart, and gut, you know, the entire nervous system, that we take it in. And before I think about it and analyze it, give it back. You know, as best I can. And over the years, I've gotten better. You know, people always say, how did you know to ask about that? You know, what did you mean when you said that? I said, you just get better as you receive it, you hear the key descriptor words of their challenge or themselves and offer it back without judgment. You know, and that's the key without judgment. We're such quick to analyze what right, wrong, good, bad. Because then when I offer it back without judgment, then they feel it's safe here. I can say whatever and I won't be judged. I can take risks and they'll even accept my challenge. So it's a clean receiving and offering back. And I do this because I try to bypass my brain. And when I do demos, people often say, you know, when you said that, what were you thinking? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I was thinking. You know, so...
Did that skill develop over time, Marcia? You said you got better at it. So is that with practice, you think, or were you intentionally trying to be better at that sort of act of receiving and handing back?
One of the things, reasons why I love doing coaching demonstrations is because I really have to demonstrate what I teach. And since my first coaching book was just for leaders, because my publisher had never published a coaching book until my next one. It was called The Discomfort Zone. And it was really identifying the role of discomfort, that when you're letting go of what you think you thought you knew and who you thought you were, it's uncomfortable. So in coaching, you may make your client uncomfortable. That's okay. Mm-hmm. That just means that they're learning something. But it was there that I came across all the work around head, heart, and gut. And there's a lot of stuff on polyvagal theory, although somebody just did a study that debunked that. but it was so technical. I think it had more to do with processing than just the receiving. I've worked in 47 countries. Every country has a saying about, I should have trusted my heart. I should have listened to my gut. You know, and so that, and there's neurotransmitters in our gut, a lot of them, millions. You know, I don't think we need that for digesting food. And so knowing that we are taking in signals and experiences, but we have to send it to the brain to process into language. But if we just receive and allow that processing so I can speak, but without thinking. So I think that I so appreciated that I would really become present before conversations and did my best to catch any judgment, which I feel my judgment right here. I think emotional intelligence is a critical skill to catch within my body when I have a reaction, let it go and come back and be present. And I think the best thing is that I come back and I remember I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I'm not here for my performance. I'm here for you. And that helps me come back to be present and just receive and give back. So yeah, I practice it for many years now. And still I'll go to my head. I'll do that. Oh, I know that. I've been there, you know. And it's like, no, you haven't. And let it go.
Well, Marcia, what you're describing, receiving and giving back, is that what you would call reflective inquiry? That's in the title of your book. And if not, elaborate on that a little bit.
Okay. Please. That's how you do reflective inquiry, is to receive it. Actually, it was John Dewey in 1910 who coined the term reflective inquiry. He was an educational reformer, and he wanted school teachers to do this with the with kids, so they would start thinking for themselves and not just thinking exactly what their parents told them, but to be more critical thinkers. He said, you know, just share back what you hear them saying, you know, like, I believe this, share that back, you know, and then ask the question. And that's what the first chapter of his book that he wrote in 1910, How We Think, defines coaching perfectly. The rest of the book, I don't know what he was talking about, you know, but that chapter was really worth it. And so it's reflective statements, that sharing, that summarizing. And if they give you a lot, you know, maybe a paraphrase that you inferred from what they give you, not interpreted. You know, this woman the other day kept talking about she struggled going and talking to these experts, these people that have so much more experience. And I had said, and she said, you know, it's just little me. And I said, okay, little you, who's not that experienced talking to the luminaries. You know, that was a paraphrase, but she had given that to me. And just that, I didn't even have to ask the question, just, you know, defining the situation for her. That's the reflective statements. But paired with a question, reflective statement and question makes it inquiry instead of just question asking. Mm-hmm. And I have just found that more powerful than just questions. And certainly I'll ask just a question now and then, but I think I use reflection even more than questions when I coach.
And Marcia, in that summarizing, mm-hmm. you talk about, you know, finding those critical expressions, right? And there's often times where we work with clients and learners, and mm-hmm. just in the improvement realm, you're working within processes that don't work, and that brings up certain emotions, and there's a lot yeah. of thoughts and feelings that go, mm-hmm. how do you really kind of key in on those critical expressions, those real things yeah. that really matter to the customer?
Mm. Well, the first thing, you know, I always tell coaches now, coach slow up front. You know, we try to understand from our own perspective what they're dealing with and then move into action way too quickly. I don't even care for the normal interpretation of the GROW model, because it's like, you know, what do you want? How do you see it? Okay, what are you going to do about it? You know, and I say it's no, it's GRGRGRO that I need to see it as you see it. And I cannot assume I see your situation as you do. So especially when somebody's made a mistake, first I need to understand. So tell me how you see this problem, and then what is the challenge that you're facing? And that's why reflection is so important up front and getting confirmation. So what you're telling me is, and then I'll summarize what they offer, is that how you see it? I need to see it through their eyes first. And while I'm doing that, it's already starting to clarify for them. They'll often see what their problem was just by doing that. It's like, oh, you know, and there's breakthroughs just in the clarification of how they see a situation, you know. And so we start at that point. And, you know, and I always caution, and don't quickly go to, okay, what are you going to do now? But, you know, let's look at in the moment that triggered you to be someone else or do something else, what was going on with you? You know, let's see what the trigger point was. Let's take a look at where you stopped yourself, you know, or where you jumped in to do something too quickly, you know, so trying to understand the moment. And because then it's in the moment, whatever that was that created the problem, that's what they want to shift. And that's when we agree, okay, let's take a look at that. Is that what you want to look at or change in our coaching together? So seeing the situation, the challenge, and the point of impact, you know, where the problem occurred, without judgment, just trying to understand, seriously, I want to see through your eyes because I see it differently. There's so much power in that. It makes the rest of the coaching easy, you know. And I worked with tech companies for 11 years. And, you know, the thing was, you got to do a root cause analysis of a problem. You can't just solve a surface problem, or it's going to pop up somewhere else, the whack-a-mole thing, you know. And so, you know, and in quality, you do that. In coaching, we do that. We need to do a root cause analysis and discover what was the trigger point. What was it that really caused you, smart person, of doing this? And again, with patience, with compassion, and curiosity and no judgment, so they don't feel attacked. So I think that's a critical way of looking at these problems.
Marcia, Skip and I were talking a couple hours ago, talking about the book and talking about the podcast. And he mentioned a very, very large health system. Anybody that was put in a leadership position, they were assigned a coach. No questions asked. You know, you got a coach. And I think I probably know what your answer is going to be, but is there a big gap? I mean, do we have a lot of opportunity, you know, across the board for leadership coaching? And how much are we missing out by not being coached?
You stacked your questions. I'll answer them. So,
I
yes.
I tend to do that. I'll
yes. Yeah. I have seen it finally grow more here in the U.S. It's finally taking off that, yes, leaders should have a coach because they're shifting. You know, there's a great book that I used to teach leadership for Maersk, the shipping company, and they based it on the leadership pipeline that said every level of leadership requires you shift your work values and you know, what you think is most important. Otherwise, you're not going to take on the skills. You know, and so frontline leader to leader of leaders, you know, where coaching comes in. You're now developing leaders. You're not doing the work for them, you know, and then there's functional leader and enterprise leader that at every level. In order to make those shifts from who I was before to the leader I am today, you know, then that's a great thing to do with coaching. You know, I was working with a brand new CEO a couple months ago, and I said, what is it about you know, that they gave you this position, that you want this organization to grow. So what is it that you know, do that really will inspire you people to work with you to grow the organization? And he says, I'm a great problem solver. I said, okay, that's good that you did that. But now, you know, what are you going to do to inspire them? It was so difficult to get off of, I deal with customers well, you know, and I'm a problem solver, to understand as a CEO and to try to grow an organization in these crazy times we're facing is going to take more than that. You know, so that shift of who I think I am to who I need to be now, that alone is really helpful for leaders going into new positions, wherever that is, to have a coach. I have worked with companies, I'm working with two of them now, where they actually have leadership development programs for potential people. You know, part of it is we want to see who we want to promote, you know, and so they put them through this year-long leadership program with on-sites of learning this and that, and they give them an internal mentor and an external coach, you know, and it'll prepare them. And sometimes at the end of the year, some of them decide they don't even want to move up because of the impact it's going to make on their families or something else. And the company is really good about that. But to really experience what it's going to take from me to be a leader, I think that's great for people to know instead of just throwing them in the swimming pool and expecting them to know. So in the preparation, you know, before they're even promoting, I think that's really wise to give high potentials a coach as well. So, yeah.
Well, Gemma, do you have another question?
I do. Just sort of following on from that, Marcia, can anyone be a coach?
Great question.
You know what? It's an interesting thing. I often told leaders, and especially in the tech world, please don't promote someone to a leader that doesn't like people. you know, because you get that they're technically way proficient, but they may not like people. I said leadership requires more than technical skills, you know, and so can anyone be? I mean, anyone can take on the skills, and I don't have to know your business in order to coach you, but there has to be a willingness, you know, a desire, and to look at you as my client and like you. You know, you have to know I like you. And so if you don't come from that, that wanting to really help people grow because you really appreciate the human in front of you, then that's going to be difficult. And then that willingness. So, You know, I want to say I was coaching, working with a former CEO for Mayo, who they said, we want you to be a coach, but he didn't know. And he was a thoracic surgeon before CEO. He couldn't go back to surgery because it had been 14 years that he was a leader. And they said, you know, and I don't know if they were just trying to find a place for him, but I was having conversations with him about, do you really want to do this, you know, to be a coach? I finally said, are you willing to let go of what you know, being the one who knows, because you've been that always in your career? And, you know, he thought about it and he came back to me and said, no, I'm not. You know, and he went on to become the dean of nursing at the university here for a while. And then he decided he could go be the grandfather and be the one who knows with his grandchildren.
Gosh, I hope that doesn't happen to me. But, anyway, Marcia, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time. What a great discussion. You know, it was very, very stimulating. I learned a lot. And I'm going to finish your book, and I know I'll learn more. But on behalf of Baptist, thank you so much for being our guest. And folks, the book is called Coach the Person, Not the Problem, A Guide to Using Reflective Inquiry. Once again, Marcia, thank you very much.
Thank you.